Mike and Miana gather playing some game. But I pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Miana gather playing some game. But I pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the RHAP B&B for episode 12 of Survivor Winners at War. We are nearing the bend here, but there is still plenty to talk about. Get all settled in with your peanut butter and your cookies and your milk or whatever you chose to step down for or not step down for, because we have a fantastic panel to break down another episode of season 40. Let me first welcome in someone who has been a bit Kim Sadlin since Wednesday night until now, Liana Boris. Liana, hopefully we can cheer you up this podcast.
Well, that's why I come to the B&B, just because of all the silly shenanigans, because like you said, Mike, I have been a little Liana Kim Sadlin, but I did get the Denise iconic I'm done moment, which is giving me life. And so that's helping me get through the week as well as this podcast. And I can't wait to get into everything we have.
Yeah, ironically enough, Denise, I'm done moment means you're not done, personally. So I don't know if her intention was meant there, but it's working for you.
Oh, I'm all in. Okay, not done over here. But yes, iconic.
Now, we are so excited to welcome in an icon from the Island of the Idols last season, as it were. And it just so happens that we are celebrating this week a whole calendar year since she celebrated the end of her season, as we are looking down the barrel of the end of season 40. Lauren Beck, fourth place finisher from IOI. We are so happy to have you on the B&B. How's it going?
It's going great. Thank you so much for having me on, Mike and Liana. I'm so excited to be on the B&B airwaves and talk some Survivor Winners at War with you guys. It's so crazy that you said it's been a year. I know there's been all these sentimental posts from my fellow castaways. And it's just so crazy how fast time truly does fly. So yeah.
Can I ask, like, what was the mood on, like, you know, night 39 once everything is done? Was it for, like, an exhaustion perspective, especially from some of you that made it to the end of the game? Was it really as celebratory as, like, wow, I can't believe this is all over? I can't imagine, like, what, you know, cocktail of emotions must be going on.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. They actually said at Ponderosa that season 39 partied like the best cast that they've ever seen. We went so hard. We drank so much alcohol. We had a blast. But I think more than anything, especially for me, it was like I wanted time to slow down because I knew that the moments that we were experiencing were fleeting and we weren't going to ever be the way that we were again. So without me crying, because you guys saw more than enough of that when I was on my season, even though you're just going to hear it. But, you know, I think in those final moments, it's just really looking around and being like, wow, I've met all these amazing people and experienced this crazy experience with them. And I will hold every single one of them close to my heart for the rest of my life. So, yeah, I truly do miss it. I really do.
Aw, I love that. I love that attitude. I love that approach. Do you feel now, because this is the first season after your season aired that you're watching, and of course it's all winners, which I'm sure makes it even like more insane to watch. But like, how does that change your view of the show now that you've seen, you know, what happened when you were out there and how it was edited and how it was portrayed, now thinking about what might be going on season 40?
You know, it definitely, as a viewer, makes you watch the game differently because you know that there are all these side conversations that are going on, but they can't show every single conversation. Mm. I think that it allows, especially as somebody that has played before, it allows you to give more leeway and room to the castaways for why they may have behaved a certain way versus just jumping to like, oh, why would they do that? I would never do that. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think watching these winners is so great. It's something that I don't think that I ever thought that I would get to see. But also, mm-hmm. they're living on our island. Koru is Lumuwaku. That's where we live. That's where that was my home, Vokai, for 38 days. So it's very nostalgic. And it's like, oh, they're eating breadfruit. And I remember that pathway. And, you know, there's just all these little things that really make me miss the game. And you know, it just makes it that much more exciting because I can be like, that's where we had the family visit and that's where we did this. It makes me feel cool, I guess.
How ticked off would you have been, or would Rob and Sandra have been, if they made the merge and they found out that they were never going back to that shelter that you ended up living in those last few days?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that was probably the best thing of the entire experience. That house was unreal. I was more excited about the fact that there was a swing versus a shelter. I was like, you know, I've lived out here for 37 days. Who gives a shit about a shelter? I want to go on the swing, you know?
Thank you. Priorities.
Yeah, you know, like, I want to have fun. Little did I know, Dean was finding clues. I'm just like, I just want to have a good time. But yeah. Yeah, that house was like MTV Cribs. I literally asked Sandra, I'm like, so can we go see our house? Is there food? I should have done a little crib segment now that I think about it.
Oh, that would have been amazing.
Like cribs or like pimp my shelter. And he'd be like, yeah. Yo, dog, I heard you like swings.
I heard you like breadfruit. So we put breadfruit on your breadfruit.
I love it.
Well, I think that's something that also adds a bit of a layer to you watching this season, Lauren, is that you have been doing recaps of the season as well. Over on Talent Recap, you have been doing videos with a bunch of Survivor alumni, including people from your own season. Most recently, you had what might be one of the most interesting doubleheaders I have ever heard of Kobe Arca from Survivor Palau and Krista Hasty from Survivor Pearl Islands.
Yes, it was a very interesting combination. So what happened was, at Rob's premiere party for this season, I ended up meeting Krista, who is a lovely woman. That woman just beams light from her soul. She's so great. And then Kobe and I really hit it off when we did the red carpet. So when I had asked Kobe to come on the recap, and thank you so much, Mike, for talking about that on here. I know there's a lot of Survivor recaps, and I feel a little silly sometimes doing them because I feel like, you know, there is so much great coverage out there, but I want to thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah.
But yeah, Kobe and Krista are great. It was very interesting to have the two of them on there, and they held nothing back at all. They let it all come.
Yeah, so it definitely sounds like you have to check it out. Like, if the review is they held nothing back, like, oh, man.
Oh, yeah. I definitely had to cut a couple things because I got a little crazy.
Wow.
What I did leave in, well, because, you know, because you guys know, too, you get certain Survivor players who, like, want to make things really nice and precious and put a little pretty bow on it and make it seem like everything's okay. And then you have the other ones that come out and they're like, you know, no, I'm just going to tell you how it is. And I really appreciated their honesty and their transparency. And it was really fun. It was great. I can't shut up. So I think I told you that, Mike, when I met you, I was like, I have the gift of gab. Like, I can't stop talking. So any chance I get to talk, and especially talking about Survivor, it's two things that I love to do. So,
no, listen, you are preaching in the choir there. And all I can imagine, because Krista was memorably compared to Big Bird in her original season, but it seems like more like HBO Big Bird now, if apparently there's some radical stuff happening in this video.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about all that, but I do know that they had no problems letting me know how they really felt about specific people and their games and stuff like that. And it's just great to hear different people's opinions about the game, especially since they played, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, let's start getting into this episode, because obviously we have all been paying close attention. It was always going to be a big question mark as to how you follow up that Tony tour de force ending in this big 4-3-2 vote against Sophie, how things would go from there. It leads to a little bit more chaos, a bit more focused chaos. There were only about two or three targets going on, but still plenty of whispering, culminating in Kim leaving the game after trying to mount this insurrection against the man who seemingly holds all the power in the group. Leona, mm-hmm. I know I am probably asking one of the more biased people on the panel, given your love and affinity for Kim Spradlin. That being said, what did you think about the episode overall?
Yeah, I mean, I was, of course, incredibly nervous the entire time. And I think upon reflection, the fact that Survivor can elicit such emotional reaction in me means that it's doing a good job. Because the last thing you want to do is watch a TV show and be like, meh. And I was the furthest thing from meh watching this episode. It was incredibly intense, incredibly emotional. And I think overall it was a really fun ride, even though I was not so happy about the ending. But you know what? I'll take it.
Yeah, Lauren, what were your thoughts about this particular episode? Especially, you know, we're really starting to, Nick says in this episode, like, we're starting to gear up for the end game. What are you thinking about how the pieces are sort of falling into motion here?
I mean, you know, I think when you, it's hard, right? Because you start to see a clear front runner towards the end. And I think that right now it's the Tony show. Tony's calling the shots. He's got his hand in all these different pots. His social game is killer, as we saw with Kim going home after trying to lead the charge against him. But I thought there were so many great moments in this episode. Ben touching the shelter, like in the challenge, and saying that he had touched it. And he had that moment of like, oh, am I caught? Maybe I could lie. I thought that was so funny. Denise's hand up to Jeremy moment was gold. But yeah, I mean, I think the way the season is shaping up, it's really showing that Tony's killing it right now. That's kind of what I'm seeing.
I'm trying to remember, Lauren, did you ever have one of those whisper filled tribal councils? I'm trying to, was the Karishma one? Was that like a big whisper one?
Yeah, it was the one where Nora had like, it was after the family visit and she tried to like go against us or something like that. And she
and that's when Dean immediately whispered to Tommy, like, hey, they're gunning for you.
But this is the thing with whispering at tribal. And this is what I realized when I was talking to Kobe and Krista. What they're doing is, because we all know that Jeff, being the amazing host that he is, has the ability to sort of ask the right questions that could potentially blow up your game. So I think what the winners have done is they've taken Jeff out of the equation. They're now whispering at tribal. They're not allowing things to be seen or heard in a certain way. And they're sort of taking the reins and playing the game that they want to play, I guess. I know a lot of viewers at home are frustrated with the whispering at tribal, but I think as a castaway, it's so difficult to navigate that space. Like, how, you know, you need to tell your alliance what you need to tell them, but you can't in front of the jury just like be all loud and boastful, because then people will say, oh, you're just doing this for the jury. So there, it's a very difficult dance on a tightrope at tribal. It's crazy. And I know that all too well, because I couldn't shut the hell up at tribal. That was like my time to speak my truth.
Well, I think that's a really good point, because sometimes it goes as an underreported story how important tribal council is and how critical it can be to somebody's game. Because like you said, not only are you essentially performing for the jury, you know, once you get to that stage in the game, but you are also trying to walk, like you said, a very tight rope. I didn't even think about it from that perspective, that it's essentially removing the complicated elements of tribal council and making it just scramble whisper time, which oddly enough is less complicated.
Yeah, I think Scramble Whisper Time is going to become like the new name for the Survivor spinoff, which is just only Tribal Council. Like, it's a brand new game where you only go to Tribal Council and you can only communicate via whispering. It's like that MTV. Remember that MTV show that was called, like, I don't know. It was in a library and like you couldn't make noise. And if you did, you lost money that you would eventually win or something. And they do all these big things like pop balloons or like tickle.
I can literally see the commercial in my mind. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Let's see. Let me see. I can't remember the name of it. Like, it was like a quiet, like the quiet show.
The quiet show. Is that a thing? That sounds like a game your mom plays in the car.
Like, okay, kids.
Oh, Silent Library. That's what it was.
Silent Library. Yes.
It's pretty close.
Do you think that should, maybe that should be like a different game? Yeah, is like, yeah, you go to tribal council and like you can't talk. And if you do talk, I don't know, you like lose your vote or something.
Yeah.
I would lose right off the bat.
That sounds like one of the disadvantages that you could get from the Island of the Idols.
The silencer.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, I don't know, part of me also kind of wonders if maybe the returnees are over Jeff Probst's use of metaphor. And they're like, yeah, whatever. Let's just get back to our own thing. We don't need to talk to you about Lazy Susans or whatever.
Oh my God, I know. When he said the Lazy Susan, I was like, what are we doing right now, Jeff? It's like on my season when he was like, you know, it's Wednesday night, you've got your Survivor donuts, and you're leaning in. It's like, wait, what? Gotta love him. Love him to death.
Oh my gosh. I'm trying to even think, like, you know, especially because you guys aren't eating much, you're tired. Like, I would have a hard enough time responding to those insane things, being well-rested and fed.
You know what it is, though? It's so funny because it's almost like it starts to make sense. So then, like, I can actually tell you, it's so funny. We would think of things like because we know Jeff loves metaphors. So we would think of things that we were going to say to him at the challenge, like in terms of a metaphor. This is like castaway boredom at its finest. Mm-hmm. Like, we would have nothing to do. We'd be like, what are we going to say to Jeff in the form of a metaphor? We can't come up with things, though, that are as good as Jeff's. Jeff's got it down pat.
I will say, you know, obviously, you know, I think that maybe one of the complaints coming from this episode is not necessarily like the whispering now, because I do think it was probably the most cohesive whispering section we've seen. And I 100% attribute it to the fact that we had subtitles. We're like, we actually know what people are saying. And that made it 10 times more appealing from my perspective, because we did not feel as out of the know as before. We actually understood like what people were doing. That made me realize, okay, this is why Tony would play an idol on Sarah, because he felt that she was in trouble. You know, this is why Jeremy wanted to play the coin, because he told Tony about it and Tony told him to back away from it. I wonder if it's just a thing of like, let's say your mom makes like a really great meatloaf one week and you're like, wow, this is a great new recipe. I love this. Thank you so much, mom. It's delicious. And then she makes it like every week for the next month. Eventually it's going to lose its value, right? And I feel like this is what, like, the third and 4 weeks that we've had all this whispering going on. And so I can imagine that people are just fatigued as an audience member of seeing Tribal Council break into this so many times recently.
Well, so this is like, so the, I'm trying to think of how do I complete this Jeff Probst level analogy. So then adding the subtitles, it, you know, is that like adding a new side dish or putting a twist on the dish somehow? Like,
yeah, exactly. Oh, now it's so Mexican meatloaf.
Oh,
throw in some extra taco spices.
Yes, come on, cumin.
Yeah, exactly. The subtitles are the cumin of Survivor.
Yeah, man, that would be such a great analogy for Scramble Whisper Time, the new hit show coming to CBS this fall.
Well, let's get into some of our stuff here on the B&B, and we're going to start with our preseason predictions. So Liana and I, before the season, wrote down how we thought each castaway was going to do. I would say sight unseen, but obviously we saw how they would do beforehand. And I mean, Liana, I'm going to take a shot in the dark here, but in the not so dark, because I feel like this room is fairly well lit at this point. I can imagine that Kim Spradlin was your winner pick, I'm assuming.
Oh my gosh. Okay. She was actually not my winner pick. Okay.
Wow.
And the reason why was because I wanted to put my eggs in multiple baskets, because if Kim won and she wasn't my winner pick, I would still be above and beyond happy. However, if she lost for some reason, at least I could still be like, but I still have my winner pick in. So it's still a mystery who my winner pick is, because that person is still in the game.
Wow, so you're very much like Kim with her fire tokens, just like doing one a piece in all the different chests.
Exactly. But for Kim Spradlin, I was very optimistic about her chances. I said that she would win two individual immunities. I said she would pull together her group of allies through a patented Kim calmness. Then she is so beloved that she's elected supreme leader of Fiji and rules all of Fiji forever. And then I said she would pull a Shangela on Drag Race All Stars and make a bunch of Game of Thrones references and confessionals. I have no idea where that came from.
Does she like? Oh, well, no, she was the one. Yeah, she was the one, I think, that said that she wanted to be the Tyrion to Sandra's Daenerys.
Yeah, that must have come from somewhere. I said she would have 26 confessionals and she would have 644 fire tokens. Her ally would be Denise and her enemy would be Sandra.
OK. All right. Well, I did not. I think I put her with zero fire tokens. So, you know, I think we set up a good spectrum there as to how she ended up. I said that Kim would find the first advantage of the game, which may have happened, I guess, if you count idols on the beach. I'd say she'd win one of the returnee challenges, which TBD. And I said that she would have like an uncharacteristic moment that she freaks out during and breaks that sort of Kim Spradlin calm. Her closest ally is Sophie. Her worst enemy is Sandra. 28 confessionals and, of course, zilch fire tokens. Lauren, how did you think Kim was going to do, you know, as such like a big name of the game? Did you come into the season thinking that some of those bigger people were just going to be natural targets early on?
Oh, absolutely. I think what was most shocking to me was in the beginning, seeing Kim sort of coming up to these conversations like, can I come up to you? Can I talk to you? It was very shocking. I mean, when you say Kim Spradlin, that is like a name in Survivor history. So I thought Kim was going to kill it. And I still think she has the potential to do that. You know, someone else is going to get back in the game and it could very well be her. She's a challenge beast.
So, yes, I think that, and I think also the fact that she is voted out relatively soon to win the challenge will be. Mm-hmm. I think that that's going to be beneficial for her. So hopefully, fingers crossed, because we'll get, one or two more vote out.
Two more people are voted out and then we'll have our challenge. But that's going to take place over the course of like 2 days. Apparently, this episode took place over the course of 1 day, which boggles my mind.
Oh, what? Wow. 2-hour episode, right?
Oh, for yes. next week.
Mm-hmm. For next week.
Oh, you're talking about this past week.
Yeah.
Oh.
This was one day. So they had the challenge. Oh, no wonder they like made it. They turned it up a notch or whatever with the 15 minutes standing on the little perch.
Yeah. They're like okay, let's, we got the sooner we finish this, the sooner we get to tribal council and we can start whispering. Let's go, people. And I guess I can imagine they were probably doing this challenge at the same time as the effort task on Edge of Extinction at the same time, perhaps.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably a good shout. Interesting. Okay, so that'll be, yeah, I mean, that'll be like what, like in 2 days, 3 days or something that then she'll be competing. And I guess, though, there's so many fire tokens out there. Like, will she be able to get enough to get some sort of advantage to compete with the other people? I guess that's the question.
Yeah, it's this very weird thing. And it was pointed out, I think, the first time that, you know, Tyson came back, is this idea of how weirdly inverse the Edge of Extinction is, that someone like Natalie was voted out first, but it gives her so much more opportunities to get all these fire tokens that she could spend on challenge advantages, as opposed to someone like Yule, who just got voted out and had to bequeath everything. And so he has nothing and is automatically at a disadvantage in the challenge. I can imagine that with little opportunity to get fire tokens, on top of the fact that she's going to be, what, one of like 15 people competing to come back, it she's more uphill, I think, than someone like Natalie or Parvati, who has money to spend.
Yeah, that's true. I went back to look because Lauren, we did these predictions for your season as well.
One professional.
No, I had you in the finale. I had you actually losing the final three, but only because people felt that you were too cutthroat because you played the game and the jury felt betrayed by you. And so that was why people didn't vote for you.
It could have very well played out like that. We will never know.
Oh, wait. So now I'm looking at mine too. Ooh. Oh my God, actually. All right, listen to this. So this is my prediction on how Lauren Beck would do in Island of the Idols. And this is like right after I came back, all the way back, you know, a year and change ago after talking with you. I said you would make the finale. I said you were our fourth place finisher. I said you'd have the biggest reactions of the season. I said we'll hear about her game more than what we'll actually see. Your closest ally would be Missy and your worst enemy would be Nora.
Oh my gosh, isn't that so funny?
Oh my God, I was like, I'm so close. And then
Wow, that's great.
That's amazing.
Well, I mean, listen, as much as you might have been self-effacing with your own predictions, Lauren, I think we both had good prospects for you, help.
I love that you guys saw that instead of, I have to be completely honest, and I think I told you this, Mike, like, going out there, I was like, there's no shot in hell I'm going to be able to do this, just based off of physical ability and not going outside. But that's really cool to hear, like, what people saw before I played. That's awesome. Aww.
Well, I also, my impression personally, it was like, I thought that your tribe was so solid compared to Lyro, just from like both a strength perspective, that I was like, there's a good chance she might not be going to tribal a lot pre-merge. And then she's in that position where if she makes the merge, like, she'll be able to make a lot of great social inroads and do really well. And not that thing did not exactly happen, but I feel like it was very close what ended up happening.
It's so funny you say that, because I think even looking at my tribe, like when we got to the island and looking at the other tribe, we all thought we were screwed. Because looking at the other tribe, you know, you've got Aaron, Missy, Elizabeth, you have all these crazy athletes. So we thought we weren't going to do as well. But I think what Vokai really did well was how close we were. Like Chelsea from my season always jokes with me and says, because we used to do every night before we would go to bed, we would do gratitudes and say things that we were grateful for. So she always jokes that Lyro was cracking jokes and having fun and Vokai was too busy praying. And I'm like, yeah, but our prayers to the survivor gods made us win. Okay.
That's right. Yeah. Because you guys only lost one of the first ones, right?
Yeah. We were all very much like, it wasn't like a dictatorship. Like, I didn't feel like someone was like, okay, you have to go here and you have to go there. It was very much like, okay, what's everyone's strengths? Where do you guys want to go? Who feels comfortable doing what? And we heard on the other side, it was a bit opposite. So I think it's all about how you go into the challenge. And I think that was, we had a good sense of of team. And, you know, I think everyone had a good sense of their strengths. And so no one put themselves out.
I mean, I'll admit, when I saw on paper the tribes, I had a very similar idea as to you. But watching that first challenge where just watching, and, you know, no offense to Chelsea, Dean, and Vince, but watching them self-destruct on that puzzle. And then that night voting out Ronnie, I'm like, A, this is going to be a cutthroat AF season. But B, if they're not necessarily concerned about, like, you know, keeping around the big buff guys, then I think that means Vokai might have an opportunity to really keep cruising.
Yeah, and that was the thing that was so interesting to me. And I guess a lot of people of those three and other people that would do puzzles, they would be like, oh, I'm really good at puzzles, and then drop the ball. And then the next challenge, we'd see that same person on a puzzle. And I would be like, what? Where's this? What is happening right now? Like, there's no way. And even me, if I was like, oh, I'm good at puzzles, I got this, and I lost, I would never step up for a puzzle again. So it was just very interesting to see their strategy and how they did things.
Well, teamwork makes the dream work. You guys had it. Well, yeah,
but we even saw that this season, right? We're like, Boston Rob failed like two puzzles in a row, but they kept putting him on it no matter what. Yeah. He's bound to strike one of these times.
And I think that that's like, it's like a lot of pressure too on Boston Rob. Like, he's trying to live up to this name, and then he's got to win all these things for everyone. And it's just like, I don't know. I feel for him in that moment. That's a lot of pressure. I couldn't imagine.
Well, and then you had the Boston Rob doesn't quit thing, because apparently he still finished the 20 coconuts, even though he was like bleeding. Like, I didn't get it.
He cracked his elbow.
Yeah, I don't know. Kobe even said on my podcast, he was like, I think he was trying to have an Ethan moment, but it didn't quite read that way. I wouldn't say that necessarily, but I think, like, you know, try to keep your energy. You have a lot of, you know, you're going to have a challenge to get back to. Like, I wouldn't be going up the hill to try to prove something.
Yeah, it was, well, it was interesting because I could see, maybe not as blunt as Kobe saying this is him having an Ethan moment, but like, it is definitely him being like, I want to stick with it. You know, I think he's made it very clear that this is the last time he's ever going to probably play on Survivor. So he wants to like make the most of the experience. But it just felt weird that, like, you know, obviously five people didn't finish in the black to like get, you know, the fire tokens, and I didn't see any of the rest of them doing that, you know. Yeah, so it is a little weird, no, though, like, good,
they have no energy to do. It's like, you guys should just chill and relax. I don't know, I feel, but again, I think it does speak volumes. Like, I think Boston Rob felt like he had to do that.
Well, I mean, he brought a lot of coconuts back that they could eat. So
yeah, wait. Okay, so let's do the math here, because the first six people that came back, they each had to bring 20 coconuts. So that's a minimum of 120 coconuts stacked next to this shelter. What the hell are they going to do with all those coconuts?
Eat them, I guess. Make popcorn. Coconut, whatever.
Liana, you joke about the deforestation of Fiji all the time. I genuinely fear for the ecosystem on that island after this, if they are picking and eating 100 plus coconuts in the next week.
I just hope that for every coconut they pluck, they like plant a coconut tree or something.
Production would give them a rule like, great, all right, now we're going to give you 20 coconut seeds. The losers have to go plant the coconut trees that were, were, you know, just completely stripped of its coconuts for this challenge.
Yeah, that'll be the new challenge.
I also did like how Jeremy unintentionally shouted out the Edge of Extinction at Tribal Council when he's like, it's like we're on an endless treadmill. And now he's like, we were on one too.
Yeah, I loved that when the jury was like, that's us, guys.
Yeah, great unintentional jury management from Jeremy there.
Jeremy, right? Jeremy.
Well, okay, what are your thoughts on Jeremy here, Lauren? Because I would say that Jeremy is in such a weirdly unique position where, like, his back has been against the wall a couple times in San Juan del Sur, but Jeremy has never experienced what I would essentially call the Kelly Wentworth treatment that she got in Cambodia, where, like, he's just constantly on his toes, back against the wall, trying to figure out how to scrap out from each and every vote.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, you're saying that's what he's experiencing now, right? Yeah. Like, he's, yeah. I mean, eventually, I think for Jeremy, though, it's going to let up. I feel like at some point he keeps escaping the target. Eventually, they're going to forget about it, I feel.
Eventually it'll slip through the cracks because, yeah, I guess maybe other priorities come up. Or...
Yeah, and he continues to slip through the cracks. I mean, he's been up, his name has been up so many times. Mm-hmm. I just feel like eventually they're going to back off of that and move on to something else. Or maybe they won't and he'll go to Edge of Extinction.
I don't know yet, because, like, you oddly have this weird thing where, like, Ben hates him, but then he didn't vote against him this round. Right. So like, it might just be one big facade of like, damn it, I can't get rid of Jeremy. If only I could actually cast a vote against him for once.
Well, and it was very interesting to me that Jeremy didn't play the 50-50 coin advantage. That tells me that something in him made him feel comfortable enough to where he didn't feel that he was going to be the one going home. Because he did play that I'm leaving tribal advantage. So mm-hmm. something in there tells me that he feels like he's not numero uno target.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that he wasn't in danger and was willing to risk it, especially when you're so close.
Yeah, I would have played it. There would have been no way in hell I wouldn't have played. I would just, because what's the risk? You get immunity or you don't. So just play it. But then I think, again, it goes to that showboating for the jury. And then you don't want people to know that you had this advantage. Where did you get this advantage? Is he going to give the advantage back to Michelle? Mm-hmm. Like, that's another question mm-hmm. I have.
Yeah, I wonder if, like, I could imagine if Michelle asks for it back, he'll give it to her. But I also feel like of the two, Jeremy's going to be in the most immediate danger more so than Michelle. So I feel like she's fine being like, you hold on to it. But I also wonder, like, did he make a mistake in pulling it out, moaning to the moon, and then eventually putting it away? Is it one of those things of like no half measures, like either take the advantage out and play it, or Now he has pretty much shown everybody, and only Tony really knows that about the coin and Michelle as well, but he essentially has shown everybody that he has something in his pocket.
Well, and it's the same thing with Tony too, because now everyone knows he has an idol. So it's like, yeah, both of them show their hands. So maybe Jeremy will be in the hot seat again, because people are now going to be like, oh, wait, what? He has an advantage. Now what? What does he have? What is it? Where did he get mm-hmm. it? Like that kind of thing. And that seed of doubt is all you need to be like, oh, no, you got to go.
And no one is going to assume it's a 50-50 coin. Like, you're going to think it's an idol, right? Like, no one's going to be like, oh, so you have a 50-50 chance of going home. Like, no, that's not. No, no.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if someone's like, no, don't worry. The thing I have is a coin. And then one side it says safe and the other side it says not safe. And I'm supposed to flip it at tribal council. Like, I think even some of the most hardened players would be like, you stop making up fairy tales here, Jeremy. That coin does not possibly exist.
Right. Like, oh, don't worry, guys. Like, there's a chance that I might not be safe. You know what I mean? Like, don't worry. You can still not vote for, you know, whatever. Anyway.
Before we move on to more fun and games, we're going to take a quick break to listen to a word from our sponsors. And we are back. So let's keep on keeping on. Well, let's get into some of our games here. And I want to start with one that actually comes from one of our great listeners, Caitlin. Caitlin says, so my sister and I have been playing this game in quarantine, like the Jeopardy category before and after with celebrity names. So my idea is to have clues combining actors and Survivor players, either from the current season or any player. So we're going to test a bit of Survivor history between you two, Lauren and Liana. Here's how this is going to work. So in light of the Jeopardy category before and after, I'm calling this previously on Survivor and next time on Survivor. So here's how this is going to work. I'm going to give a clue. And this clue, the answer to the clue, is going to be an actor's name and a Survivor's name that have one name in common. So, for example, Sophie Clark Gable or Daniel Day Kim Spradlin. So I'd give you a clue that sort of talks about those two people. Like, for example, for Sophie Clark Gable, I could say she slayed a dragon and frankly, my dear, she doesn't give a damn, which, of course, would be the clue to Sophie Clark and then Clark Gable. So if you think you know it, you will buzz in and you'll have the opportunity to answer. If you get it wrong, the other person will get an opportunity to guess. Simple scoring. If you get it right, you get a point. If you don't, you get nothing. Just temperature of the room.
So hard.
What do we think our chances are?
Low at best.
Well, here, I'll do something while we're talking here. I'll send you a list of all the Survivor contestants so that can sort of help you have a visualization of, you know, only about 500 people to choose from.
Oh, that's easy.
Okay, that makes it nice and easy.
Yeah.
But first, while we're doing this, I do want each of you to come up with a special buzzer sound so that I know who is buzzing in when. So, Liana, do you have one off the top of your head?
Ooh, shoot. I want to do something that's like, yes, Jeff, I touched the structure from Ben's thing, but that's like way too much.
You can yell, I touched the structure.
Okay. Okay. All right. Okay. I'll just yell structure or
structure.
I don't know. So I'll figure it out. Something like that.
Lauren, do you have an idea for a buzzer noise?
Mine will be adios.
Okay, there we go. There we go. And just so you know, so in the chat that we are in right now, I have provided a link to the list of all American Survivor contestants. All of them are up for grabs. They could be on this season. They cannot. So use your imagination and your brain power, people. So once again, the answer is going to be first an actor or celebrity's name, and then the survivor's name with one name in common. So like Daniel Day Kim Spradlin. And then I would give a clue, something like this actor went to Hawaii 5-0 to design a winning game in one world. And in which case that would be the answer. So good luck.
Okay, just be prepared for a lot of like dead air before we yell out our
we'll provide a lot of thinking time. All right, let's start out with one here. Let's test the waters and see how this goes.
Okay.
And I'm gonna also provide these in non-gender they them, because sometimes it can be male, female,
oh,
etc.
Boy.
They have had their moments of glee, particularly when they bought a useful looking coin.
Okay.
Wait. Structure, Liana.
Yes, Liana Structure.
Okay, Leah Michelle Fitzgerald.
Mm-hmm. That is correct.
Oh man!
I was like, a coin.
We were just talking about it.
I know.
Yes, it is indeed Leah Michelle Fitzgerald is the correct answer.
I thought I had anxiety watching the episode. Like my heart is beating a mile a minute playing this game. Okay.
And just so you know, that I consider that the easy one.
Oh no.
Let's see. I don't know. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Okay. We'll see. All right. Here is number two. They may be known as a rebel without a cause, but most times you can catch them just chilling.
Structure? What?
I thought I heard adios.
Okay.
First.
No. Go.
I'll go to Lauren.
Go Lauren.
No. Don't go to me.
Okay. I'll go to Leon then.
I spoke before I knew.
You were like, I gotta get in there and like.
I know half of it, just not the other half.
Okay, all right. Okay, James Dean, Kowalski. What's his name? Is that
close enough? James Dean Kowalski. Yes.
Kowalski. Yeah. Okay.
Yes, that is correct. James Dean Kowalski. Lauren, you were so close. I know you had one half of it.
I did. Liana, you're so good at this. You're making me look bad. I don't know actors' names, by the way. Like,
it's my Slumdog Millionaire moment. This is what I've been preparing for.
Who wants to be a millionaire?
All the times that Liana watched Rebel Without a Cause, it's finally coming into play. All right, next one. They may still be looking for a 20 this season, but they have no problem figuring out who is the mole.
Uh-oh.
I have no idea.
Can you say it again?
They may still be looking for a 20 this season, but they have no problem in figuring out who is the mole. I did come up with an alternate clue for this one. Let's see if this will help. They know their way around the world, whether it's TAR or CNN.
Okay, it's Carmen San Diego part of this. They know their way around.
I'm gonna give this I'll give this 10 more seconds and then we'll see.
CARTNN. Carton.
All right, time is up. You are trying to make an acronym out of nothing. So they may still be looking for a 20 this season, but they have no problem in figuring out who is the mole. They know their way around the world, whether it's TAR or CNN. I'm afraid we were looking for Natalie Anderson Cooper was the correct answer.
Oh my God, dude. Okay. I got super confused because I thought it was the actor first and I was like, Natalie Anderson. And I was like, but it can't be because that's the, okay.
And I thought, could go saying, the other way. I thought you were saying 20.
They may still be looking for 20 this season.
Confusion on both parts. Good.
20 fire tokens to get up to Liana's amount.
Oh, CNN. I heard T. Okay, all right. No,
yeah, you
good.
Heard C A R and T N N, which
what
I was
did you
very
say?
T A R and CNN.
Oh, T-A-R-N-C. Okay, yeah, just a little flippy floppy. That's okay. We good.
We good. We good. That's just a momentary stumble, but we're moving on here.
Sure, momentary in air quotes.
Exactly. They're hopelessly devoted, whether to Danny Zuko or a Black Widow winner.
Oh, wait. Wait.
Lauren's thinking it out.
Oh my God. I'm literally Googling.
Hopelessly devoted.
Whether to Danny Zuko or a Black Widow winner.
Black. Olivia Newton.
A Black Widow winner.
Yes.
That would be.
Let's work. Can
we work through this one? Black Widows. Okay, so we got who?
Yeah, sure. Why not? You can cooperate on this one.
Okay.
Okay, well, it's a winner. So is it not Parv?
Is it? Oh, it's a winner. Okay.
They're hopelessly devoted to a Black Widow winner.
Okay. Hopelessly
devoted. Oh, it's John. Okay.
Okay. John Fincher. It's Olivia Newton, John Fincher.
That is correct.
Leona touched the structure.
You know what? I'm going to throw away the rules here. You both work together on this one.
Yay. Team point.
Yes, indeed. It was Olivia Newton, John Fincher.
Oh, that was good, Lauren. The John Fincher thing. Because I was like, whose last name is Parvati?
Oh, yes, that very popular last name of Parvati.
Or the first name of Shallow.
I don't know. I mean, we had someone name their kid Boston Rob very recently. I wouldn't be surprised if someone changed their last name to Parvati in honor of the great winner.
Ugh, I love that it's Boston Rob. That's crazy.
So wait, is the first name Boston and the middle name is Rob, or is it?
Nope, it was the first name Boston, middle name's Rob.
Next level.
Okay, but
you do you, boo-boo.
Exactly. Like, no judgment as someone who recently had to name a child. Like, no judgment to people who have to do that. I'm just very intrigued as to what the story will be when that child gets old enough to ask what they're named after.
Although, like, to be fair, Boston as a name is like a thing. Yeah. And Rob
Shane's son was named Boston.
Yeah. Do other people name their kids Boston or not?
They do.
Okay. Oh, really? Okay.
I've heard the name Boston, just not Boston Rob. Unless, we were talking about Boston Rob.
Oh, man, it's going to be super awkward when the two of them are in a room and someone says Boston Rob and they're both going to say yes at the same time.
That poker game is going to be insane.
Exactly. And the kid's going to think he's in trouble because you're referring to him by his middle and his first and middle name.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
All right. Let's have you work together moving forward here. Cooperation. Teamwork makes the dream work, to quote Vokai. All right, here's the next one. Rocket Man and Superfan.
Oh, okay. Well, obviously Superfan is Adam Klein.
Yes. Okay. And then what was the actor's name in Rocket Man? That was the movie, right?
I will say that it doesn't need to be an actor. It just needs to be a celebrity. We've dealt with Anderson Cooper.
Elton John sings Rocket Man. But they don't have Elton John and Adam Klein don't have anything.
Maybe it's a different super fan.
Ooh. Would you like another clue?
Yes, please. Thank you very much.
Goodbye, Yellow Brick Road. Hello, last name treatment.
Cochran. Wow. John Cochran. Elton John Cochran.
That is correct.
Oh, God, you're so good.
You got, yeah, but you like, you, I mean, come on.
No.
Come on.
Yana, I appreciate the support. No.
The other clue I had for this one was I'm still standing even though I flipped on my tribe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that wouldn't have helped. That
we watched Rocket Man recently and like so all the Elton John songs are just pinging around my head as of late.
Okay. Well, I was like, I'm sure there was an actor in Rocket Man with the last name Adam. Or the first name Klein. I don't know, maybe.
All right, here's the next one. They're the king of queens and getting voted out with idols.
Oh my God. Kevin James Clement.
Yeah, you got
That was so much teamwork. Sorry, that just like popped in my head because Kevin James is like a joke name in our household.
For like what? Is it like a euphemism for something?
I love you got after
it's like, well, it's no Kevin James, you know, but it's like clearly an insult Sorry, Kevin James.
Oh, so you're doing like the that don't impress me much, but like yeah. Ironically, like he's no Kevin James.
Yeah.
I like this one as well because this just gave me the image of like James Clement mall cop.
I wonder what James would be like as a mall cop. Is he like prying things off of the walls? Like,
yeah,
I need it.
Or I think like kids who get caught just like never appear again, considering how he knows how to bury them.
That's right. That's terrifying, Mike. Thank you.
Mike!
I know, that went to a very dark place, but... All right, here's the next one. They can tell you about the wonders of space or the nutritional benefits of peanut butter.
The wonders of space?
Mm-hmm.
Not Rocket Man, so this is not Elton John.
No, I did not repeat Elton John. Even though there are a lot of Johns that have competed on Survivor.
What was the second part?
They can tell you about the wonders of space or the nutritional benefits of peanut butter.
That's either Nora, Kim, or Tyson.
Now, Nora was my... I didn't even think about that. Like, people who... my first thought was Nora also. Wait, something about space? You don't have another one?
I don't have another one, no.
The wonders of space. Like, somebody who went to space... Is that a movie, The Wonders of Space?
It's not.
I just think The Wonders of Space is... Did you actually Google The Wonders of Space?
Yeah, I did. I just Googled it.
No, that is a Mike Bloom original, people.
Neil deGrasse Tyson, Apostle.
That's right.
Holy crap. That's a talent, okay. Liana.
So I was like, Neil deGrasse Tyson popped in my head, but the person, not the name. And then I thought Mike Tyson, and then I was like, that's not right.
Well, I did have one for Mike Tyson if this one didn't work, which was they'll take a nibble off your ear and a large scoop of peanut butter.
Oh, I would have gotten that one right off the bat.
Yeah, so Neil deGrasse Tyson Apostle is the correct answer.
Wow.
And I mean, one is blunt in the game of Survivor, one is blunt on Twitter correcting various pieces of pop culture. So they're sort of one in the same.
Yeah,
there you go.
Essentially the same person.
All right, here's the next one.
Oof.
National Lampoon's Nicaraguan Vacation.
Okay, so obviously it's someone from Survivor Nicaragua. Right. Yes. Like, mm-hmm. Let's go with that. And then someone from some of the National Lampoon.
Chevy, yes,
you got it. It's Chase Rice. Chevy Chase Rice.
Yeah. Chevy Chase Rice.
Yes.
Ooh, it's also a sentence.
It is. Yes, indeed.
Chevy Chase Rice.
Go Chase Rice, Chevy.
Go Chase Rice. That's like the new version of C-Spot Run.
Chevy. Chevy Chase. Chevy Chase Rice. Chase Rice, Chevy.
See Chevy Chase Rice.
That's the newest tongue twister to get through to make sure you're warmed up for tribal council for those metaphors. That's Jeff Probst's new like vocal warm up.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
All right, here's the next one. Loves Leslie Knope, hates Aubrey Bracco.
Okay, loves Leslie Knope. So it's either Ann Perkins or Ben Wyatt. Wait, are they fictional characters?
I did not put fictional characters' names in this.
Okay, so it's not Ben Wyatt, is what you're telling me.
It is not Ben Wyatt.
Oh,
Ben Wyatt?
it's not Ben Wyatt. I think Lauren just heard the name Ben Wyatt and decided to guess Ben Wyatt.
Then it's Adam's. Oh, I think I know it. I think I know it.
Adam okay. Scott
Pollard, I think
That's
is the
it.
Other
yep.
piece.
Adam Scott okay. Pollard is correct.
Okay. Yeah.
My other one was going to be Party Down and Ticket to the Hoop, but that feels a little more like niche than the Parks and Rec reference.
Party Down, Take It to the Hoop?
Party Down was a show that Adam Scott was on with a bunch of people back in the day.
Like a caterer, right?
Yep, it was, oh. It was a catering group. It had like Ken Marino, it had Jane Lynch, it had Martin Starr in it. I very much recommend people check it out. I think it's on Hulu. And Take It to the Hoop is obviously a basketball reference.
That have you guys seen the ads for that new Adam Scott show?
There's a new one?
Yeah, he's like hosting this. It looks horrible. I think it's called Don't.
It's called Don't?
It's called Don't.
What's it about? Is it scripted or it's a show?
No, okay. All right. Hold on. Let me find. I don't want to obviously get anything wrong because this is such a great show.
Oh, okay. Executive produced by Ryan Reynolds and hosted by Adam Scott. And they give Big Little Lies as his biggest credit, which is questionable. Don't is a comedic physical game show where doing nothing is what it takes to win. Parentheses, finally.
Wait, okay. The ad I saw, it was like people running into objects.
Oh, interesting.
And I don't know.
I think we found like the newest version of Silent Library, right? This is like, don't do something and you win.
I'm looking at people dressed up as matches.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's very bizarre.
That's what I saw.
Yeah, they're dressed up as matches on a stage and there's like fake flames all around.
Lord, is this triggering for you?
Yes. It had to be fire, didn't it? It just had to be.
Guys, this is literally Silent Library. Like, in each episode, members of a 4-person team will strive to accomplish various challenges such as don't laugh, don't blink, or don't look back as they work together to build their bank.
That's Silent Library right there. What network is this on?
ABC. It's going to launch June 11th, if anybody is interested. God. Yeah. Well,
I feel like this is also a very badly titled show. Right? Like, this has a million snarky headlines written about it already. But, like, do you want to check out this new show? One word, don't.
Don't. Yeah.
Terrible.
But maybe I'll check it out for Adam Scott and for people dressed up as matchsticks.
Yeah. Horrible. I'm so excited.
Maybe there'll be, like, a disadvantage in the fire making challenge from now on. Like, somebody has to wear a costume that would get in the way of them making a fire.
I mean, I'd be down. I think that's great.
We definitely need that.
Yes.
All right. I got one more here for you. Let's see if you can finish strong. You've got mail ... in your pants.
Meg Ryan. What's Ryan's last name from Survivor?
Meg Ryan.
That's right. Lauren, you got one.
Yay!
It is indeed Meg Ryan Ulrich. The other one I had was, they may be sleepless in Seattle, but at least they're dressed in their finest turtleneck.
Oh, that's good.
So, oh, man. I'm going to say congratulations to both of you, because, I mean, basically, you got all of them correct, which is a heavy, heavy feat. And thank you again to Caitlin. Those were all Caitlin's submissions. Her and her sister came up with all those. So thank you so much, Caitlin. And thank you to both of you for submitting yourself to basically the opposite of don't, which I'm just saying do answer these very, very hard questions.
Oh, that was amazing. That was so fun.
Thank you, Caitlin. That was really cool.
That was very stressful.
Most thinking I've done in this quarantine.
Yeah. I know, right? I think that says more about me than it does about the game, but at the same time, like, embarrassed. Oh. Okay, all right. I just need
just some decompression time.
Yeah, seriously. Okay, I'm back to breathing. Okay, all right. Well, let's do a little bit of a palate cleanser before we get into the idiotic game that I have prepared for us to play today. And I want to talk about, there was a quote that Tony had that was, "This is war. Stop crying. Put your man panties on." And it got me thinking about what the appropriate clothing item is when you need to go to war and stop crying. Because I don't know if man panties is necessarily what it is. Because what I was thinking is, I think like big girl suspenders could be a possible option.
Can you define big girl suspenders for me?
I cannot. But I feel like that's like suspenders for some reason is like to me the optimal. All right, I'm about to like get shit done clothing item.
See, that's interesting to me because I feel like suspenders are the clothing item of weakness because they're holding your pants up for you. Like, you're not doing anything about it. These suspenders are doing it for you. You are so down in the dumps as a person that you can't even hold your damn pants up without these suspenders.
See, when I think of suspenders, I think of a fashion statement. So we all have different ideas of what
this is. The real suspenders is really the Rorschach test right now of fashion items.
Yeah, I didn't realize that would uncover so much. But where? So then, Mike, where do belts fall?
Well, that's a good question. Maybe belts, it's because
hold your pants up too, right?
I suppose so, but I feel like belts, like, you have to physically, like, restrain the belt. Like, there's an action behind it. Suspenders are just relying on your shoulders and gravity, right? Like, you can't eliminate your shoulders. And then, this is a weird sentence.
What about overalls?
Yeah, see, I can get behind over, because overalls are at least on the outside, right? I feel like suspenders are being, like, I feel like they're a little shiesty. Like, you usually have a shirt on over them. Like, you're hiding something. You're pretending that your pants are being held up, when really the suspenders are doing all the work.
Shiesty overalls is a very interesting concept. Okay, all right, Mike, then. What is your This Is War, Stop Crying, put on your blank?
I mean, I feel like it's like lace up your boots, right?
Lace up your boots.
Lace up your boots. Interesting. So
boring.
Okay, then I don't know, shine up your helmet.
Yes, shine up your helmet, strap on your suspenders. I'm still on the suspender train. What's another good clothing item?
Or like brush off your gloves. I don't know, do you use gloves in war?
Great question.
Well, you have, like, some of them are, you know, like, I'm thinking maybe because I just watched Drag Race today of, like, the arm length, you know, very, like, oh, these are my dinner gloves. These are my war gloves. Like, oh, it's 6 p.m. Let me put on my war gloves. Like, I don't know. Okay. Well, fine. I still am sticking with my suspenders theory, though. So.
Well, could there be something maybe on the man panty today, like something with pants instead? Like, not necessarily, like, the item of clothing, but more so, like, the type of pants you're putting on.
Ooh. Like, okay, what is the most intense fabric? Is it, like, your corduroy pants?
A bit burlap?
Burlap.
Burlap pants.
Put on your potato sack. Let's go to war.
Yeah, I have a question for Lauren. Are these the types of things that you guys discuss when you're like, what analogies are we going to talk about?
Absolutely. Today? Burlap sacks and overalls and all that. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm still sticking with my suspenders theory, Mike. Despite your,
I'm sorry, I just don't trust, like, suspenders.
Don't try. They're very, very shiesty.
Listen, if I was in a contestant and there were people walking around Ponderosa wearing suspenders, I'd be a little suspicious. Just saying.
That, you know, to that point, I would have to agree. I would have to agree with that. Like, I'd be like, who's this guy in the suspenders? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Totally. That's so true.
I don't trust this guy.
I don't trust this guy because he's got on those shiesty suspenders. I mean, come on.
I think for me, it's a bow tie. Like, I really don't trust Bob Crowley.
Oh,
like,
then don't. Let me introduce you to Neil deGrasse Tyson Apostle.
My favorite. Okay. All right. Well, I am beyond excited for this game. We're going to play a game that I have called Bird or Nah, because I was inspired by the whole scene with Tony getting pooped on. And then clearly he gets the idea of the spy nest from the bird poop, or at least that's what I'm choosing to believe, that those, that was like a causal thing where he was, yeah, like, oh, birds. And then looked up.
I'm glad he didn't initially think that it was a bat, because that would make him, like, have an entire cave, right? The spy cave.
The spy cave. Oh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, this could have taken a very different turn.
So I don't know how viable a cave is for spying.
Yeah, because I guess you're, like, in the cave.
Yeah, like, come into my cave.
Let me spy on you. Okay. All right. So this game, Bird or Nah, what we're going to do, I started reading the Birds of Fiji Wikipedia page, and they have some insane names. Like, let me just give some examples before we dig into this. One of the names of a legit bird that is found in Fiji is the Pomeranian Jaeger. Okay.
Those are two things that I love.
I know. The Ruddy Turnstone. Also a name of a bird.
That's so, like, that feels like something Uncle Vernon from Harry Potter would say.
Yeah, right. It's like an insult of some sort. So I'm hoping through this game, maybe we can get some new lingo going. But the way this game is going to work is I'm going to go back and forth between the two of you, and I'm going to read three bird names. Two are real and found in Fiji, and one of them I wrote myself. So it's up to you to guess which bird is not real that I wrote using a random word generator.
Yes.
Yep.
Well, I have to ask, Lauren, because I know that people will sort of give you a bit of a briefing as to like how to navigate the jungles of Fiji. Were you told anything about the birds before you went out there?
We were not told about the birds. No, we heard about the birds over at Lyro. Poor Lyro. They weren't eating, sleeping, or winning challenges. They had these crying birds out there that I never heard them, but I did see them and smell them because I went to Lyro one day. We won a challenge or something happened and we went there and it smelled horrible. And I guess these birds would like fly into their backs and cry all night long. And like, and you can't, they're going extinct. So you can't, they couldn't eat them or kill them or anything like that, which I'm glad that they couldn't. But I guess these birds were just horrible, but we didn't have them at Vokai.
Wait, I want to go back to this. They flew into their backs?
They flew into their backs. I forgot who it was, but I guess they had built their fire in the flight path of these birds. Like, they were living on this bird's island. This was the bird's home, and I guess Lyro infiltrated their home. So they would fly. I guess they would all sit around the fire, and one of the birds smacked into someone's back.
What?
And I guess they sounded like...
Oh my god, so these birds, so if you're sitting at fire at night, like Survivor's a stressful game, suddenly you hear the approaching sound of a dying cat.
Yes.
And then you get hit in the back by something and you look up. Yes. And a bird flies away.
Yes, and Janet is so cute. She's like, you know, I actually like the birds. It kind of reminded me of like crying whales. It was like a white noise machine. Like, what?
Okay, Janet.
Yeah, Janet. Only Janet sure could like make these dive bombing, yes, you know, aggressive birds sound so friendly.
Yes, absolutely. But oh yeah, we weren't told about we were just told don't kill any goats, and don't kill any birds. Everything else is fair game. And then we did get like a little packet about dangerous foods and stuff like that, but that was really it.
Okay, well, I don't know if that'll help you here, yeah, but I don't know what would. So,
if Liana does bird calls, then maybe that would help your experience.
Perfect.
Right. I'll like run into you. I don't know. I guess that's breaking social distancing. Run into your back. Okay.
Yeah. If this bird were to fly into your back, how would they do it?
The sound it would make is thwomp. So, okay, Mike, let's start things off with you. These are the first three birds. A. A tawny frog mouth. B, a finicky titmouse. C, a wandering whistling duck.
Oh my god.
Which one did I make up?
The wandering whistling.
Second one for me.
The finicky titmouse.
Well, the wandering whispering duck sounds like a delightful children's book that I might honestly need to write by the end of this quarantine. I feel like the second one is definitely real because the titmouse is a real bird and I feel like they would add something to it. The first one was what? What was the first one?
The tawny frog mouth.
Okay, I feel like a bird would not have a frog mouth, but somehow they would call it that. I mean, I can't imagine there are ducks in Fiji. If there are ducks in Fiji, something went very wrong one winter. So I'm going to say the whispering duck or whatever it was called is the fake animal.
I'm sorry, Mike. That was incorrect.
What?
It was actually the finicky titmouse.
I knew it. I knew it.
A little bit of a trick answer there.
Wait, okay. So the what is the name of the duck?
The wandering whistling duck.
That is a real, like, animal.
It is a real bird that exists in Fiji. Let's see. I can tell you more about it. Let's see.
Yeah, I really want to hear the wandering whistling duck.
Yes, the wandering whistling duck. It has its very own Wikipedia page. They inhabit tropical and subtropical Australia, the Philippines, Borneo, Indonesia, Papua New Guinea, and all of the Pacific Islands. There are three subspecies, etc., etc.
And it whistles?
I don't know. Let's see.
It doesn't have lips!
Okay, it's formally named tree ducks. Oh, yeah. Okay. It has a new name because of their loud whistling calls.
weird.
Boom.
That is science. So strange to me. We're going to learn so much about animals today. I'm so excited.
That's so exciting. Yeah. Okay. Lauren, let's move on to your question. A, the consumed scrub fowl. B, the mini colored fruit dove. Or C, the buttery robin.
Wow. Okay. I definitely saw a bird that looked like a robin out there. But I'm going to go with C.
That is correct.
Wow. Yes.
The
gotta bird, go with your gut, man.
That's good. The consumed scrub fowl is indeed a real bird.
That is a poor bird. Like, are you saying that it's like easily eatable and that's why it's called consumed waterfowl?
I guess that's better than my initial interpretation, which was that it's like consumed in itself and it's like has anxiety. I don't know.
Or it's like so busy, it's like consumed with everything.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure.
So busy. It's so busy.
I don't know. I mean, if this damn duck stopped wandering around and whistling, maybe it wouldn't be so consumed with anger.
Oh, yeah, Mike, if you do ever write the book, The Wandering Whistling Duck, I'd love to help collaborate on some of the other characters that might be in it. I think you really have a whole host of names you can pull from.
I think we could do like a modern day version of Chicken Little, right? Mm. Where like they all had different personality types. We can definitely do Wandering Whistling Duck and we can do Consumed Waterfowl.
Yeah. Scrub Fowl.
Oh, Scrub Fowl. I apologize.
Yeah. Okay, well, Lauren, you have 1 point. Mike, we're going to go back to you. A, the crab tail jabber. B, the Fiji wood swallow. Or C, island thrush.
Okay, so I know thrush is a bird, as sexual as it may sound. So it feels like that one would make sense. B has Fiji in it, but I can't tell if that's to trick me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say A is the fake one. I'm going to feel like you went simple here with your random word generation.
Okay, so you said that A is the fake one. That is correct. Yes, the Fiji wood swallow is a real bird. Okay, Lauren. A, the noble megapode. B, the chief flat drum. Or C, the red-necked stint.
I believe the red-necked stint. Didn't she finish seventh place in your season, Lauren? I love you, Elaine.
We love you, Elaine. Elaine. I'm going to go with B.
That is correct.
What?
Yes. Chief flat drum was what the word generator gave me. So, all right, back to you, Mike. A, the white rumped swiftlet. B, mm-hmm. the white spotted mammoth. Or C, the white throated needle tail.
Ah, that was my nickname in college.
Ayo.
Wait, did you say white spotted mammoth for B?
Yeah.
That's not even a bird. That's just a mammoth.
How do you know?
I mean, I'd be weird calling a bird a mammoth unless we've just completely done away with, you know, prehistoric animals. Can I hear all three again?
Yes. A white rumped swiftlet, mm-hmm. a white spotted mammoth, or your nickname in college, white throated needle tail.
I think you know what, it's sticking out to me like a woolly mammoth. I'm gonna go with white spotted mammoth.
That is correct. We have a tied game, 2-2. We are going into our final question, Lauren.
Oh no.
Okay. A, the masked booby.
Oh, Leona, you cover that show, right?
Yeah, that's right. B, the red-footed booby. Or C, the jittery booby.
I am dead. Okay, wait. Jittery booby, red booby. What was the first booby?
The masked booby.
Masked booby. I like the dramatization of that. Okay, I'm going to go with... Wow, I'm about to lose right now. I can just feel it. Masked, red, Or what was jittery. The last one?
Jittery.
Jittery booby. Okay, I'm going to say C.
That is correct, Lauren.
Nice.
You are 100% correct.
You
on
know
this
your birds.
Quiz. You do, yeah. I am very impressed.
Listen, wait. I studied Fijian birds before I went out there just so I knew what I would come in contact with.
I cannot wait for the new show coming out to Fox of Ken Jeong being like, I know exactly who that booby is.
It's, yeah, the hit new TV show coming to Fox. Can't wait. Nick Cannon hosts. Love it. Whew, yeah. So I was like, I want to come up with a bird game this week. And then I told myself, that's stupid. And then I started reading the list of birds in Fiji and I was like, nah.
What's your favorite bird name?
Ooh, my favorite bird name. Let's see. I mean, obviously the island thrush just made me laugh immediately. But the pectoral sandpiper, I thought was also a Ooh. Good one. Didn't use it in the game, but that was for my tiebreaker.
Does that mean like, is it jacked? Is that why it's called pectoral sandpiper?
I don't know. I guess so. There's also the wandering tattler, which is also a good nickname for someone. Oh, I just
that was
don't know
Ben
who.
This episode, right?
Oh, yeah, they're right.
Speaking of Ben, I do want to talk about something because amidst all this, we get this one scene where Ben and Tony are just sort of going on casual idol hunting. Ben finds one and tries with the greatest of ability to try to just pass that off, put it in his pants during casual conversation without Tony noticing. Obviously, Tony does, calls him out on it. Ben tries to distract him by carrying him off like he's a newlywed as they run through the jungle. But I guess my question is, like, was there something Ben could have done to try to distract Tony more so that he could have grabbed the idol without Tony knowing?
Ooh, so some sort of distraction. So because I think the problem is like, oh, you see it, right? Like you see the idol, you have to distract him before you ever reach for it. Yeah. Or.
Yeah, I would imagine. Because again, I think he was really trying to like distract Tony, like feel like he's looking away just by carrying on a casual conversation. But Tony happened to be looking over. And so when Ben just tried to casually slip it into his pants, Tony was right there to be like, what do you think you're doing?
I don't know. Hey, look over there. Does that work, do you think, or no?
I don't know, Lauren, if you were searching the jungle with somebody, and I forget if you had done any sort of like group idol hunts during your season, but if someone said like, hey, what's that? Hey, look at that whistling wandering duck. Would you look out?
I think in that situation, if I were in Ben's position, because we all know you can't go on these jungle walks and talks for hours, right? So what I would do is probably leave it and go back to it. That's what I would do. And I know that sounds silly because people would be like, oh, well, somebody else could find it. But like, in terms of how long Ben and Tony could actually be away from camp before people back at camp are like, hey, where's Ben and Tony? I think that conversation probably lasted 5 minutes maximum. So find the idol, you see it, and then I would go back to it. I would tell Tony that I had to like go to the bathroom or something. Mm-hmm. And then be like, can you go away?
When you guys are out there talking, because obviously you don't want to be overheard by people. Oh, what is that? Like, do you hear that? Or like, what is that over there? Like, maybe it would work. Hey, look over there. I'm just
saying. I definitely think your senses are heightened, right? So you're like definitely conscious of any rustles of leaves, even though it's probably just like a lizard. It's not Tony in a spy shack. But like, I think, I don't know. It's hard in that moment. I think these group idol hunt things are ridiculous. So good on Ben for trying to hide it. I think that, you know, I wouldn't have had the balls to do something like that. So good on him for trying. But I just feel like, I don't know. I would have gone back to it. I would have. I wouldn't want Tony knowing that
It's an interesting idea. I don't think we've ever had anybody like know where the idol is, keep it there and be like, I'm going to come back for you later and then just pass it by.
I mean, it could sound ridiculous and I might get a lot of flack online for saying that because people could come back and walk on that same trail and find it. But what I would do literally is tell Tony like, hey, I got to go to the bathroom. Maybe that would get him to walk away and then I could just grab it out of the tree, put it in my pants and go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good idea because there's no other, I think, like super clean way to make sure that he doesn't see it. But I think what Ben did was literally the worst thing that you could have done.
But then the follow up was just like, so Ben, and just that it was so goofy of him like falling to his knees and being like, please, Tony, forgive me. And then just like, still, but like, as soon as there was that one moment when Tony says, like, what are you doing? And Ben tries to be like, we did it. And like starts jumping up and down, like, yeah, look what I did for us. And Tony's like, no, let's go back to the time you tried to get that idol from behind my back.
It was so good. That was the same as the touch the structure moment, because it was like, can I get away with this for like a split second?
He was gonna try. You saw it all over his face. He looked like a little kid, like, yeah, I did, Jeff. It was so sad.
Yes, Jeff, I touched the structure. Like, so dejected. And it was the same thing with Tony, right? Like, oh, I think I can get away with this. Oh no. But
I also love that moment as well, because you know, Tony's like, I can't believe you did that. Why would you do that with me? And Ben's like, yeah, well, you just turned the game on Sophie and didn't tell me. And Tony's like, but that was yesterday. I thought, yeah, we
come
could
on.
Know.
Come on.
My impressions are spot on, man.
Well, thank you.
Too much time on his hands is what I'm calling.
Yeah, too much time on my hands and too many Tony confessionals. I think the 18 from last episode really sharpened my Tony impression.
Really, 18? Oh my god,
it was. That's indeed.
Well,
yeah. How many did he get this episode? Do we know?
I think he got a fair amount, but it was definitely more evenly distributed. Where we found out, I think I'm assuming everybody got one. I think even like someone like Denise, who did not have a large role to play, ended up getting one as well, which showed again that, like, do we see people mounting an insurrection against Tony? We see people's opinions about what to do with Tony. I mean all of Sarah's content was basically about her just laying into Tony in the first part of that episode.
Mm-hmm.
I love how that continued into the next day too. Like, there was that one moment that was a few seconds long, but like after the Edge of Extinction stuff, it cut back to the rocks and Sarah was still yelling at Tony about flipping.
I know, it makes me wonder too. I feel like hearing Sarah say, you know, if this sinks my game, I'll never speak to you again, like real world shit, it made me think, like, I just feel like she's been crossed by Tony one too many times and she's just done. That's probably why it lasted the next day. Like, she's just like, I'm done. And I hope it doesn't affect her game, that all happens.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, that was crazy. I loved the editing though of that too, with the like, I told myself I gotta be calm or whatever it was.
And then just cuts to, you just sunk my game.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, that's a really interesting dynamic. To be frank, I cannot believe they're still like a tight pair in the final seven.
Mm-hmm.
This is
when
they were able to, like, I'm still astounded personally, and I think this really speaks to Sarah's game. That, okay, the plan is to get rid of Tony. Tony wins immunity. The plan should immediately be to go after Sarah, and they don't. It's not even on the table. They say, yeah, okay, fine, we'll go after Jeremy.
Mm-hmm.
It's wild.
Yeah.
That's what's so crazy to me, because I feel like they're like, yes, okay, we're getting down to the wire, final seven, but they're all thinking, like, I can't beat Jeremy in the end. Sarah was the last woman to win Survivor, which is insane. Sarah's somebody that you definitely need to be looking at too, that you can't beat at the end, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it seems like though is something about Sarah's social game is like really translating well, because I think with the I want to call it like the fake plan with Tony saying they're talking about targeting Sarah, I think like that threat of, oh my gosh, maybe Sarah's in danger, we have to all vote together kind of thing. I don't know. There's some sort of like weird witchcraft magic that was like happening there to get people to vote cohesively. And I feel like that Sarah plan was somehow part of Tony's like, and Sarah's probably like harebrained strategy, because why would Sarah in her right mind, if she ever felt like she was in danger, say, no, please don't play the idol on me.
Yeah.
Which makes me think it was like somehow part of this like concocted plan. I don't know.
Yeah. Like a ruse in front of all the other castaways.
Yeah,
just,
exactly.
That was just so crazy to me that Tony's like, I'm going to play this idol on you. And Sarah's like, no, please don't. Please don't play the idol on me, which is...
What?
I don't think we've ever seen that before, of someone's like, I'm going to play this idol on you, and someone says, I'm good, save it, I don't want it right now. Like, you usually do the Malcolm, right? Like, please play your idol on me. Please help me help you.
Yeah, I mean, like, Lauren, do you ever see a situation where you're like, no, I'm good? Like, it would have been okay, don't play your idol on me.
Absolutely not. And I think in that moment, too, when that happened, I was like, oh shit, Sarah's going home. Because if you feel comfortable, you're going home. And I think... Yeah, it must have been a ruse or something that they planned out, because there's no way I would ever not want someone to play their idol for me. And yeah, I mean, I These people are all winners. I'm not a winner. So maybe this is like a level of gameplay that I can't even wrap my head around. You know, that could be it, too.
I never thought that it was a ruse, but it would be an interesting way, because Ben was staunchly, you know, anti-Jeremy, right? To the point where he's giving him the silent treatment. He, like, Tony comes to him, he's like, hey, I'll give you a fire token just to listen to my plan. And Ben's like, nope, I'm voting for Jeremy. No questions asked. But Ben and Sarah have a tight relationship as well. So I wonder if Tony was trying to, like, play a last-ditch effort, he could make up the fact that they were targeting Sarah to Ben, and Ben would be fearful of that and would say, okay, I guess we better vote out Kim then to protect Sarah.
Yeah, exactly. Because I'm trying to remember if anybody else, who said Sarah? Tony, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, who else said Sarah? I don't think anybody else did. I don't know. There's something there. There's something there that we missed or that wasn't abundantly clear, because I think that could definitely be the situation.
But then I guess the question is, like, well, I guess I don't think Tony told Sarah that he felt that she was unsafe. Like, I think Tony told Ben, and then Ben went over to tell Sarah. Right. And then, yeah, so that maybe, again, like, the two of them were not directly communicating it. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out if, I mean, I think Tony did something very, very smart going into tribal council, because I do believe that the votes were stacked against Jeremy going in. But the minute he starts whispering, even if it's just him checking with Jeremy of, like, we're good, right? That just got everyone's paranoia spinning, and it just extended into this big thing where he was able to build up enough time and enough apparently false plans to get Nick and Ben to flip their votes.
Mm-hmm. That was crazy. Man, I gotta go back and rewatch that.
Well, before Liana does go back and rewatch that tribal council, let's finish things off with the final segment of each and every week here on the B&B, the question of the week. We asked a question of the listeners last week. You all sent in some fantastic responses. The question of the week last week: come up with an advantage around a crime or an illegal activity in honor of the extortion advantage from last week. And we got a lot of great submissions here. And I think we can sort of put our heads together here as a think trust to see, you know, if these things could actually work out here on the island. Starting with Logan, you can have the vandalism advantage where you can sneak into an opposing camp and vandalize it. Lauren, do you think Lyro thought that Vokai was vandalizing them by sending those birds after you? Maybe they thought they got the vandalism advantage?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, what would you, I guess you could, like, I mean, it's like similar to kind of Russell Hantz kind of stuff. Like, you hide the machete and you burn people's socks.
That's Nora style, man. Hiding Dean's shoes, telling me she's going to hide the flints. That's Nora style.
Yeah, so Nora would have loved it then.
Oh, yeah. That's up her alley all day long.
But I feel like Nora would have also, like, announced that she was vandalizing. Oh, yeah.
She would have told everyone, this is my advantage. This is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to take it from you. And you're going to like it.
Logan also says the counterfeit fire token trafficking advantage could allow a player to sell a roll of fake fire tokens for other advantages.
Oh, yeah, that's good, because I mean, we saw with Jamal the fake
legacy advantage.
Yeah, so this is, like, not too far from reality.
So what do you make it out of, like, wood, these fake fire tokens?
Are they not made out of wood, the real one?
I feel like they're made out of, like, stone or something, or plaster.
Oh, I assumed they were made out of wood.
Oh, I didn't even think about this.
What did you think they were made out of?
I guess wood. I mean, that was the first thing that popped into my head. Like, yeah, of course, but I had never really considered this option before, like, what they'd be made out of. I don't think it really matters, though, because doesn't it just matter if Jeff accepts it? No, who accepts fire tokens? Who's the fire token bank?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think there's like a middleman. There's no monopoly banker here, unless, yeah, I guess production might be, to be like, yeah, these things are legit. We'll pass them on to Ethan or whoever.
This is an actual fire token. We will accept it.
I'm just imagining, like, a Dean moment at the end where it's like, I got all the way to the end with these fire tokens.
These 644 yeah. fire tokens.
Yeah. What? Sir. Yeah.
Can I also ask Lauren, what was it like in that moment? Like, did you know about the fake legacy advantage going into that tribal council?
Let me tell you about this fake legacy. When Dean was explaining that, all of our faces were like, what? He made a fake of a fake, and now he's giving Jeff, like, I had no idea what the hell he was talking about. I was so confused. I think he was even confused in that. no sense at all, sir. What are you talking? I literally think all of us were like, what is he talking about?
Oh, that's amazing.
But it was nice to see, you know, he spoke very well at Tribal, and it was very like, I got this and I got this. Here, hold this for a second. It was very cute. Yeah, we all had a moment of like, oh, dude's cute. But then, yeah, it wasn't enough. Sorry, dude. I love you.
Tomas has an interesting idea. My idea for a crime-based advantage is the fake multiply advantage, which in reality would be a Ponzi scheme on the edge. You show another player, actually speaking of Dean, your parchment with your fake multiply advantage, which will say that if they invest 2 fire tokens now, they will receive 3 fire tokens after 2 players are voted out of the game. After they invest, you would actually pay the extra tokens during the first couple of rounds to prove it's real. Once you run out of your own tokens, you start paying others from the tokens other players are investing until you convince everybody that this is real and everybody invests. Then you steal all the fire tokens, buy all the advantages of the final challenge, buy all the food you can, move to the other side of the island, and hide from everybody wanting their tokens back.
Wait, so what happens if you're one of the 2 voted out?
I guess it assumes that you're on the edge of extinction, right? Like, you're the Natalie Anderson, and you're like, there's this great new scheme going on. If you can get 2 other people in on it, like, you'll earn back double your fire tokens.
Oh. She should have started it. Natalie could have started it, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember.
She has like 8 of them right now, I think. Because if she and Parvati split Tony's 6 from last week, then she's pretty flush right now.
Yeah.
Okay. That's very complicated.
Yeah, it is. I'm confused.
Oh, maybe, you know what? Actually, I believe it wasn't Tomas. It's actually from Dean Kowalski wrote this one.
Now it makes sense.
And he ended it with anything you can do, I can do better. And he finished off with an advanced algebra equation for some reason. So I'm very confused, but
that makes sense.
Bodhi has a few. Also, going back to vandalism, you get a can of spray paint and you can anonymously paint a message that the rest of the tribe will see. To quote the Rob that rules, you ever see a can of spray paint on Survivor before?
Okay, so yeah, so that I guess you could add that to the vandalism, you know, like we can kind of compile all of these together.
Once again, Nora would spray paint like Nora was here, right?
Nora rules with a Z.
Tax evasion. When a player tries to sell you an advantage, you don't have to pay. You just get the advantage for free. But then if you get caught, you have to like spend some time with Richard Hatch or something.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of another one that's like a, you know, like a financial crime. Like, how would the tax evasion one work? Because I guess that would be like, you don't have to pay all of them, or do you evade all your taxes? I don't know. We need a CPA.
Well, here's an interesting one.
Nora's a CPA. Yeah,
there you go.
Here's
an interesting one. Election fraud. If you misplay an idol, the votes are changed so that it looks like you correctly played your idol. The same person goes home regardless, but the vote totals are changed. So, for example, if Tony had lost immunity and played his idol at the 4-3-2 tribal, the votes would have been revealed as 3 for Tony, 3 for Sophie, 3 for Jeremy, and 1 for Michelle. So even though Tony would have wasted an idol, it looked like the vote would be absolutely crazy. So this idea of, like, changing the vote total just to, like, make it look like you did something bananas when actually it didn't matter at all.
Now that I love. That is awesome. That would stir up some major shit.
Is this just coming from the place of somebody who did play her idol in a round that maybe she didn't need to?
Yeah. But hey, you know, better to be safe than sorry.
Oh, no, completely. No judgment whatsoever, especially after Kirschman played her idol and that was the round that you all piled their votes onto her.
Yes, yes.
All right, Muhammad has a few. The taking advantage. This allows you to kidnap a survivor from the other tribe to join your tribe, and unless they pay an amount of fire tokens, they can't get them back.
Oh, yes. And then does I was thinking of the game again, the naming game. What's his name? No, shoot.
Liam Neeson.
I was trying to think. Okay, never mind. I was trying to think if somebody had a name Liam or Neeson, and I was trying to like come up with something on the spot, but that was
like Liam Neeson Jordiez Twine.
Yeah, just like Liam. That.
Wait, isn't Hannah No, her last name is definitely Shapiro. Just kidding. Her Twitter name is Anna Lil Neeson. So that made me think of Neeson. Moving on. Not the same thing.
Hannah Liam Nelson. Neeson. Same person. Here's one. The under the influence disadvantage. You force a survivor to compete in a challenge under the influence.
That's great. If that's illegal somehow, just give them those like beer goggles.
Oh, that would be so fun.
Yeah. And then imagine doing
like one of those balance endurance challenges wearing those goggles.
That would be so much fun.
That's what they didn't they disadvantage someone on a challenge somewhere with something? Someone get disadvantaged?
There was somebody in the challenge when they did like the grenades during Vendettas where I think somebody had to wear like beer goggles during a challenge or something.
Okay. Not what I was thinking of. Didn't Chris Underwood get disadvantaged in like one of the early, the first challenge to return from EOE?
Yeah, but he was just given more knots to untie. He wasn't like blindfolded or anything.
Well, yeah, okay. Yeah, right. Well, he wasn't given beer goggles or like told to take 3 shots and then go like run the challenge. I was just thinking if this had ever happened before. Was there precedent, I guess, for being disadvantaged in a challenge? Answer is yes, aka get some beer goggles out there, Survivor. Mm.
The final one from Muhammad is the I'ma let you finish pass. This allows you to stand up finale night while Jeff is reading the votes and say, sorry, Jeff, I'ma let you finish, but insert name here has had the best game of all time. It's a pass so you're not blacklisted by the producers.
Yeah, there you go. That would be pretty funny to see.
Gets you on the side of the audience by being like, okay, everybody, we know that this other person really deserved to win, right?
Shoot, it's okay. I was trying to do it again with Taylor Swift. It's like someone's last name has to be Taylor. All I could think of was Taylor from Millennials v Gen X. So
yeah, exactly. Stockard, comma Taylor Swift.
Yeah, that doesn't really go together.
Parker Schimler says the impersonating an official advantage. You get to impersonate a producer and listen to one uncut confessional.
Ooh, that could be fun.
Yeah.
You get to pick who, but it could be useless. What if it's like, okay, so let me describe the challenge.
Yeah, exactly. Or like, oh man, I'm feeling so tired today. I've been thinking about cheeseburgers.
Yeah, useless.
But I wonder if you have to like actually impersonate an official. Like, is the goal for you to dress up like a member of production, like one of the camera guys, and just try to like seamlessly blend in?
Ooh. Yes. No, because they'd be like, that's one smelly cameraman.
Listen, I don't know about the sanitary habits. These people work so hard out there. I think everyone's perspiring in those.
Yeah, I think everyone's probably pretty gross. Not as gross as we are, but definitely sweating.
Okay, so yeah, then maybe you wouldn't notice.
John says that the Spygate advantage, where a player gets information on who has an idol or an advantage. So it's like an advantage peek. You get a chance to look at like what maybe like you either guess the person or like you just get a chance to look at one person who has an idol or an advantage.
Okay, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's kind of similar to the impersonation advantage. Essentially, like, how do you gain more information?
Elizabeth says, my scheme up with a survivor disadvantage would be the robbed advantage. You get to visit the Island of the Idols with the best robs, Cesternino, Boston, with 2 Bs, Robert Crowley, etc. But they just argue over who is right, and you leave more confused than when you got there.
I don't know. Got that bow tie on that Robert Crowley. I don't know if you could trust him.
Lauren, I do want to ask, when you went to IOI, like, was there a lot of discourse back and forth between Sandra and Rob, or were they like putting up that big front of like, welcome to the Island of the Idols and
That's something that's so interesting. When we saw that it was all edited together, part of my test, I felt, was to try to decide between Sandra and Rob what information would actually be beneficial, because they did try to confuse us. Like, I felt confused. And so when it aired, I thought they were going to show them like talking back and forth, you know, sort of shooting the shit, like not really talking about certain things to sort of further confuse me. But they didn't end up showing that.
Huh, wait, so they put out what, like they deliberately threw out fake information to try to confuse you as to what the circumstances actually were?
Not necessarily fake information, but like Rob. So my task was I had to convince everyone to eat breakfast, and I'd obtain.
And I would just say you would have passed this challenge with flying colors this season if you went with like Kim Spradlin. Like, oh yeah, she'll definitely sit out for peanut butter and chocolate.
Yeah, man. Like, so the thing is though, Sandra and Rob both have different styles of playing, right? So Rob would be like, you know, I would do it this way. I would go back to camp and say this. And then Sandra was like, I would go back to camp and say it like this. And then they actually tested me on what I was going to say, but I kept messing up. I kept messing up on, and then Rob actually stopped me and was like, okay, you can't say that because they're going to know you're lying. You keep messing up. But they both were like, I would wake up, like Rob said to me, I would wake up talking about bacon. And then Sandra was like, no, I wouldn't do that. I would do it this way. So then I'm like, oh no, how am I supposed to do it? But I just took a little bit of both. And then, you know, everyone's hungry out there. So you talk about mimosas and bacon, people are sold.
Yeah, that's that is confusing.
Yeah, so I'm surprised they didn't show, because even with Kelly's challenge, they showed, but I think it's because her test was to be paying attention, whereas mine wasn't that. But I do, that was like an element of confusion for me, the two of them going back and forth. And like, I actually had a moment where I was sitting there and I'm like, I'm sitting in between Rob and Sandra right now. They're just babbling back and forth and there's little old me. And Sandra looks at me and she's like, you're hyperventilating right now. I'm like, I know, I've been watching you for my whole life and I'm sitting next to you.
This is also like pretty late in the game too, so I can imagine like they were probably growing pretty tired of each other too, and maybe they were sort of like taking it out on you as well, of like, no Rob, stop telling her that.
And they were bored and they were like, you know, all the things that you guys win, we get to eat as well, so keep trying to win rewards and challenges and stuff and food rewards, because we get all that stuff, pizza and all that good stuff.
So they had a vested interest in you being successful.
Oh yeah, they wanted that breakfast. They probably got it anyway, but
Jonathan Troyer has the fence advantage, which would allow someone to be the middleman between the edge and their tribe. The player gets to know what the advantage is and keeps a portion of the fire tokens spent on the advantage. So they're sort of like the fire token broker, where they know what's going on and they get to skim a bit off the top depending on what the price tag is.
Interesting. That I'm just getting the Nora flashbacks to the collar thing. Like, that's all I can think about right now.
Exactly. Like, I cannot imagine now with Rob and Sandra talking back and forth, if either one of them thought like, yeah, go to camp and just be as vague as possible and then try to prove that you're the best caller ever.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And finally, from Jar Jar Minx, the public intoxication advantage, where you can choose a player to get a bottle of wine so they will spill their strategies to you. So not even a challenge, Liana. At this point, you're just boozing them up so they could spill secrets.
Yeah, just do it with the Casa de Charmin, and I think you're all good to go.
I forget, Lauren, was there any like major boozing going on during your season? I can't remember if there were any big rewards around that, besides the aforementioned mimosas.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you guys a little secret. So, oh my God. We would put alcohol in our water bottles.
What?
I'm so inspired.
Oh my God. I can't believe I just told that secret. So yeah, we would be very sneaky. And if we won, I was very lucky to go on a lot of rewards. And so we would have like a designated person. We'd get three canteens and fill them. So one night, Dean, Tommy, and Nora went on a spa reward. And they brought back two bottles of champagne and a bottle of rosé. And we got hammered. We were trashed. And production comes up to us and they're like, can we have what's in your water bottles? And at that point, we had already drank everything. So we're like, sure, here you go. Take our water bottles. And then I remember, oh my God, I'm going to tell this story. Karishma, I love you to death. She knows this. But we were all hammered and we're sitting in the hammock. And someone was like saying something, and maybe I shouldn't tell this story. Whatever. I'm not going to tell that part. But I am going to say that like Janet and Dan were laying in the hammock and the hammock came apart from the trees and like fell on the ground. We were all laughing about it for like 45 minutes. It wasn't even that funny. But we were just drunk. So yeah, it was a good time. They didn't air that.
Oh,
it's amazing.
My God. I love this idea that on Survivor, you become like a kid in high school, right?
You
like
do.
Sneaking like the alcohol in the water bottles.
Oh yeah, you should have seen Mama J drinking her, like sneaking over, like, oh, can I have a sip?
Oh my God.
And then we started, see, this is how they knew we were drunk, because we started talking about which cameramen we thought were hot. Once you break that fourth wall, then they're like, okay, now they're really trash. Because, you know, we know, like, we're not supposed to mention the cameraman, talk to the cameraman. And we're all usually pretty good about that. But then we started talking about which one we thought were hot. And then Tommy's like my brother. So he's like, hey, yo, she thinks you're cute. And then Nora's like, oh, yeah, that one with the ponytail. I hope you guys are listening. Mine's name is Mark. He's still cute.
Shout out to Mark.
Yeah, we had a good time. That's when they knew we were trash.
Oh, that's amazing. Oh my God. I really wish we had been able to see that secret scene. I don't care. The footage must exist. Come on.
God.
So even a sip of that would have been, you know, all these guys are huge and they're drinking. We had the best time ever.
That is incredible. Well, for next week. So we saw in the midst of this tribal council, Jeff Probst sort of going into like racetrack announcer mode with like, and they're coming around the bend and Sarah's sitting by herself. And that gave me the inspiration. Let's give Jeff Probst a new occupation. I want you all out there to like put him in a new job and also describe what Jeff Probst would be like. Like, what is Jeff Probst the birthday clown like? What is Jeff Probst the supermarket manager like? How does he bring that Jeff Probstiness that we all love so much to those occupations? We have a bunch of ways you can reach out to us with answers. You can use the hashtag RHAPBNB, the letter B, the letter N, the letter B on social media. You can email us, RHAPBNB@gmail.com, or just put it out on the internet. As long as you use the hashtag, we'll find it somewhere. Now, next week, I will be taking an absence. I'm going to be heading back onto the mothership of RHAP to talk with Rob about this jam-packed two-hour penultimate episode of Survivor 40. So Liana will be holding down the fort. And who is coming to stay at the B&B next week, Liana?
Well, at the B&B, we're going to have, I guess it was the final three of the RHAP sequester game.
And that was the real reason why I got kicked out, right?
Yeah, that's exactly. We were like, oh, man, we really want to do this. Can't have Mike here. So got to go. So we're going to have Puya Zanvakili and Jenny Autumn are going to be here at the B&B with me talking about everything from the penultimate episode. Should be a ton of fun.
And we're super excited to listen to that. So be sure to check that out next week. And again, send us your answers to the question of the week. Find Jeff Probst a new job and see how he does. But for now, Lauren, this was so much fun. Just a flock of fun, much like a flock of unknown birds are flying ahead of us and into our backs. We had such a good time having you on to talk about last season, this season, overalls, suspenders, and everything in between.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I really miss you, Mike. I miss your energy and your voice. And Liana, it's so great to virtually meet you. And hopefully our paths will cross in person once the world heals from all of this craziness.
Yes, we can talk about all the Of Love series.
Yes, please.
Rock of Love, Flavor of Love. Absolutely. Like, we just shoot the shit. And yeah, I would happily drink alcohol out of a water bottle with you.
Awesome. Drink it out of my actual canteen that I used on the show.
Exactly. Yes.
Thank you, Lauren, for your. I mean, the feeling is totally mutual, and it's so great to have you on as well, especially given all the awesome stuff you're doing. I give you major kudos for what you've been able to do. You know, as much as the world has been crazy, I've really been happy to turn not only to your recaps, because not only, you know, are they fun to look at the season, but also it's a celebration of Survivor after 20 years. So you being able to talk with so many alumni, you being an alumni yourself, is super awesome. Speaking of that, do you want to plug any other shows or your social media at all for what's to come in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, if you guys want to follow me on Instagram at Lauren Ashley Beck, that would be great. I've got a YouTube channel. I'm forcing my husband to shoot with me while we're stuck inside. Stay tuned for some stuff with that and check out our Survivor recaps if you guys want. You got some time. We're here. I have Bob Crawley coming on this week. And it's going to be interesting.
So fun. And with the bow tie, too, I'm sure.
The Neil deGrasse Tyson of Survivor is going to make an appearance. Liana, what do you have going on in these final couple weeks of Survivor when it comes to podcasting? A coverage of the mass booby, I assume?
Yes, exactly. The mass booby. Puya and I are talking about the mass, singer. I misspoke. We're wrapping things up with that. We have a few more weeks left, which should be a lot of fun. And then, of course, talking about RuPaul's Drag Race with Amon and Brent. That is going on as well, which we are in our top six, which is crazy. And then, you know, who knows after? Obviously, we'll need some coverage. So who knows?
Still laughing over don't.
So stupid.
I didn't know where that sentence was going, and I reasonably forgot that there was going to be a show hosted by Adam Scott called Don't.
You're like, oh, would you like to finish your sentence, Liana?
Yeah, exactly. AKA the Silent Library reboot that we all wanted with matchstick costumes.
Right.
You can follow me at a Mike Bloom type. You can check out the Survivor alumni interviews I'm doing this week. This week, I spoke with Jonas Otsuji from Survivor One World about the winner, Kim Spradlin, gave all of his thoughts about her game this time around. Very different game, obviously, from One World. And I also encourage people, if you haven't yet, check out the interview I did with Albert Destrade from last week at talking about Sophie. I thought it was a really, really great interview to hear from somebody like Albert who played alongside her. Also covering Top Chef on Parade.com and on RHAP, both in written and podcast form. Obviously going down the hatch, doing Lost Rewatch every week with Josh Wigler. I was on a couple of podcasts this week, past week as well. I talked about Riverdale and Glee, one show that I love and love to hate so much. The other one I never watched before going onto this podcast, but both ridiculous shows in their own right. So be sure to check all that out in the podcast sphere. That's going to do it for this week on the BNB. If you have any games that you want to suggest like Caitlin did, and thank you so, so much again, Caitlin, for the game that you provided. You have a couple weeks left to do it, and we are, for lack of a better term, game for anything. Again, RHAPBNB@gmail.com, or tweet it to us if it's a shorter game idea. But we can't wait to see where things go. And with 5 hours of Survivor left in 2 weeks, it's going to be a hell of a May. Special thanks to Scott St. Pierre for editing everything behind the scenes. Our head writer, Paul Osselson, Will from America for our sublime theme song. Liana is going to be back next week with Jenny Autumn and Puya. I'll be over with Rob, and who knows what shenanigans we'll get up to over there. Thank you all so much for listening. Lauren, Liana, thank you both. We'll check you out at your next stay.
Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the RHAPBNB. Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name.